Welcome to the NRF1 podcast this November Monday as we preview the Brazilian Grand Prix 26. No, we're not. What? Well, I'm not even looking at the right thing. Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast in Norwich on Audioboom, on Acast, just about, on iTunes and across the World Wide Web and on Future Radio. Does this one go out on Future Radio, Steve? No. Let's do this. Shall we do it? Third time, Ricky?
You can do it.
I'm nervous. This is really important. It's really important. Oh God, I'm going to end up putting all this in now, aren't I? I know I am. Hello and welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Audioboom, on iTunes, all across the World Wide Web. As we preview the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix 2016, not only that, the end of the 2016 Formula One season, the climax. How on earth is this season going to pan out? We're going to find out really soon. This is edition 140 of the podcast. It's not the last one. Don't worry, we will review the race, of course, at Yas Marina, and we'll be back with our season review podcast too before the year is done. But for now, we need to focus on round 21 of the 2016 calendar. My name is Michael Bailey. With me to discuss all that, plus a whole host of news and other things. We've got shed loads to get into this podcast. I'm joined by Richard Baxter, Stephen Rust, and Kyle Cumbers. Gents, are we well? Let's give me a quick a noise or a word to sum up your mood at the moment, Kyle.
Bit tired.
A bit tired, but not of Formula One.
No, just an early morning flight from Germany this morning.
Oh, especially to make the pod?
Yes. Yeah, I was doing my research, obviously, to get the German point of view ahead of the weekend. So, no, not really. but no, just a bit tired, but looking forward, excited. Adrenaline's pumping. Get me through the day.
I'm genuinely looking forward to it. Steve?
For a Monday.
Yeah. It is a Monday, that's fine. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. Rich? Whew. Yes, I like that.
That was just rather hot, even though it's really cold at the same time. I don't really know what's going on, but
that's the excitement of it.
That is, yeah. That's Formula One. The Formula One sweats is what we're going to call it.
The Formula One sweats. Only on the NRF1 podcast would anyone come up with the NRF1 sweat. What was it? The Formula One sweats.
Yeah.
Amazing. Right, we are going to talk about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. We're going to talk about all those things. But first of all, let's have some news. And we'll go through the big news that's happened just to keep you all waiting. And we'll try and rattle through this nice and quickly. We've also got tweets and socials coming up too. First news seems to have come out in the last few days. The Singapore Grand Prix is going to effectively end come 2017. According to Bernie, he told Automoto und Sport, which I'm sure is how you pronounce it in Germany. Look at what we've done for Singapore. Yes, the Grand Prix has cost Singapore a lot of money, but we've also given them a lot of money. Singapore was suddenly more than just an airport to fly to or from somewhere. Now they believe they have reached their goal and they do not want a Grand Prix anymore. Okay, well, that was quite shocking news because Singapore is quite popular. Only then later today, Malaysia are apparently going to end the Malaysian Grand Prix. They don't want to host that anymore after 2018 too. It served its purpose. It's done. This is bad news, isn't it? What's going on? We're not going to have any races left. We thought we were going to have like 28 and now it's going to be like 10. No.
It's all good. It's all good. There's tons of circuits out there. There's old ones that are, you know, desperate to get revamped. There's new ones out there. You know, it's a rest as good as a change.
I mean, I do enjoy the Singapore Grand Prix because it is quite unique. And the Malaysian Grand Prix is a very good track. But I suppose, I don't know if this is a negotiating tool from the tracks, but I suppose from Singapore's point of view, if they've got the most out of it for 10 years, then maybe it is time for them to move on and try something else to promote Singapore instead of a Grand Prix. So, and also the problem with also Malaysia, Mert Bikes at the moment is quite a huge in Malaysia, and they sell out at the moment sort of for the MotoGP, but they do struggle for Formula One. But yeah, I suppose just the way it goes. A new track will come along and yeah, go from there.
A new track will come along, an old one will return. What does this all say about Formula One? Is it positive? Everyone's quite positive about this.
Yes and no. I mean, Singapore, I suppose you could describe as almost the Asian Monaco, being a street circuit. It doesn't always produce the best of races, but it's got the glamour, which is what Formula One is obviously all about. But then, I mean, Malaysia, we've had some cracking races there recently. Like this season was good, for example. And there's always a bit of weather that gets involved. But it just hasn't got the fan base. And I suppose if you really want to get the right, you know, the right tracks, you want to get the right fan base. Go to places which really have a good following. Because I think there's, you know, there's talk about Italy, them losing their Grand Prix. And you think, when you see the Tifosi out in force, you know that they should have one, if not two, really. It's like, it's sort of like the Brits with Formula One.
Yeah, just double up.
They always turn out in force. So
have several European Grand Prix, that would do it. Britain's still in Europe, isn't it? Just about. I mean, the Liberty Media, we've got their case and takeover is obviously still being referred and is being looked at, but it seems quite open to the idea of having direct streaming coverage of races, much like you have with, say, the NFL and the NBA in America. So you basically pay a fiver a month or whatever to F1, and you can watch the races on their websites or however, as opposed to paying for a television company to broadcast them. So that's interesting. Revenue from that, I saw somewhere, might then mean that F1 asks for less money in terms of race fees, which might make it more accessible to. I mean, a lot of this, as you mentioned, or I can't remember, Steve or Carl, one of you mentioned negotiating tactics. So we will see. Oh, that was Kyle. All right. Nice try, Steve. Nice try. Bernie also said that Ferrari and Mercedes will leave Formula One at some point. He's obviously trying to talk up the sport because he's probably on his way out. What else did he say? It's also to say that the current rules in F1 don't let drivers race. And thus came the suggestion that we should move to 2 40-minute races rather than one Grand Prix, which they do in other motorsports. To me, though, you end up with two winners of a Grand Prix. How does that work? You want a winner of a Grand Prix. Surely that's the point, isn't it? Steve's ruffling his nose.
I'd be in favour of shorter races. And that was, I think, suggested by Jenson Button, I think, recently. I mean, some of them are quite short anyway. I mean, traditionally, I think probably Brazil is quite short, apart from obviously this one we've just had. But, you know, like some of the races where, you know, they go on close to near the two-hour mark. I mean, you could cut that down to, I don't know, an hour and a half or hour and a quarter. You know, I don't think that would harm it in any way. I'd be more in favour than that than trying to have some completely new two-tier type sort of race.
I don't really like the idea of more than one race in a day. I mean, how are you going to broadcast it? Because you can have... Right, there's one 40-minute race. We've now got to give it an hour and a half.
40-minute break. And the grid would be set from the first race for the second.
Because the drivers wouldn't get a break. They'd need to, you know, calm down, because you know how hot they get when they drive anyway. So I suppose they need a bit of a break, don't they?
Formula One sweats, or they'll pee in their suits, which is what Lewis Hamilton spoke about the other day in an interview. Yeah, apparently all drivers are, you know, they will go to have a wee in their suits. Michael Schumacher, apparently he used to wee every time he got in the car.
Good luck. Charm was it all?
Well, it worked,
maybe
didn't it?
Maybe lighter. I don't.
Yeah, yeah. Don't shed that load, and unless your suit starts sucking it up, and then it, yeah. That's anyway, so okay. Well, I don't think we're really in favour of that. Then I think Kyle's just going to leave it at no, which is absolutely fine. A bit on Jenson Button. He said that he had not been drug tested for performance enhancing drugs in 3 to 4 years, and one of the world governing bodies or anti-doping agencies were like, yeah, I'm not really sure that's good. I mean, is it an important thing to have drugs testing in Formula One when, you know, you can't drug test a Mercedes to see if it's... I mean, that is quite performance enhancing in itself.
I was going to say, doesn't it say more about Jenson Button's performance in the last few years that he's not had anyone test him for drugs because he's not really performed that well? That's a bit harsh.
Harsh? But... I don't think it's just Jenson. I think he was trying to raise an issue, Rich. Poor Jenson. Anyway, he's a triathlete. And maybe, well, you should have thought he'd have had a drugs test for his triathlon running. That's quite harsh as well, isn't it? We are absolutely not insinuating anything. We love Jenson, and clearly the guy's very talented and very fit.
Maybe they were just secretive and they just took the driver's wee suits after the race and just tested them instead.
Just wrung them out?
Yeah.
Can you test for performance-enhancing drugs in sweats? F1 sweats? Is that possible? A couple of extra little bits of news. I'm going to read this all to you, see what you make of this. Race Car Engineering Magazine's Sam Collins. He spoke to Sky Sports after the Brazilian Grand Prix about Max Verstappen's drive. He said, "It's not one of the best drives I've seen. I'm not one of Max's biggest fans." This is a clear understatement. "I think he's massively overrated. He's got no finesse to his driving. He gets in the car and it is like a PlayStation game for him. He doesn't really understand what he's doing." I'm on the side of people like Vettel, who just think he's a bit out of control. But in Brazil, some of the moves he made were just sensational. That is one of the best drives I've seen him produce. On the catch he made, just to avoid going into the wall, he said, he just turns up to each corner, whacks on the brakes, and it is crash or make the move. Missing the wall was luck. He got onto the high grip surface on the inside and it came round just at the right moment for him. He did lift the throttle right at the right moment, so it was a bit of talent, bit of luck. But some of the moves he made around the outside on the curbs, that was proper driving, so there is some talent there. I mean, fair play. He's putting it out there. Sky have paid him for his views. Anyone here echo any of that?
I've got three words I can think of. What a quite simply. That's harsh, I know. I've been a bit harsh tonight, I'm sorry. I was harsh about that, I'm sorry. But what can you do? It's my first podcast in a few weeks. But I'm not his biggest fan at all, Verstappen. There has been moments I think you're over the top, that was a bit out of control. But getting in the car and driving like it's PlayStation, yeah, isn't that a good thing? That you're gonna actually try and produce some action? That you're gonna go for the victory even when you have trouble, you're spinning, going towards a wall, you still manage to hold it, you get it. Just go for it. It's what Formula One's about.
Bring back the procession days of Sebastian Vettel and Michael Schumacher, Steve. We don't want any of this overtaking malarkey.
Well, that's exactly the sort of point I was going to make. I mean, what does he want to see? Just people driving around, fuel saving and tyre saving and, you know, in a slow procession to the end and sort of say, well, yeah, that was quite a good race, wasn't it? Everyone behaved themselves.
Well, I would say he does write for Race Car Engineering magazine, not Racing Driver magazine, so maybe that's the clues in the title there. We've just got to touch as well. Zak Brown is McLaren's new executive director, and they are, of course, looking for a new chief executive and chairman after Ron Dennis was ousted. Kyle.
Is he really? I'm sure the Zak Brown who's been involved in Formula 1 for... years.
I think it's him. Yeah, he is McLaren's new executive director, so he's working alongside Jonathan Neal, I think it is. But they're still looking for a chief executive.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yeah, because he was sort of linked to being the new Bernie, I believe. So he's sort of taken up that role before, not controlling Formula One, trying to control McLaren or help McLaren. But
Ron was the controlling.
Yes. Yeah. Obviously, you can't. It's difficult to replace Ron, especially McLaren. But yeah. Very interesting.
We are going to talk about the drivers because there are some, obviously, driver latest details and things coming up. So let's touch on those in a moment. But first of all, let me refer you to nrf1.uk/audioboomf1 for all our Audio Boom feed, all our podcasts, and also all our little shorts are on there as well, including some great commentary from Rich from a few races back. More on the commentaries in a moment. And hopefully on YouTube, we'll have some videos soon. I have been threatening this karting video for 4 years. We literally did it after Multi21, Vettel and Weber in Malaysia. So that is probably 4 years. It's seriously a long time ago. And don't forget, as usual, you can rate and review us on iTunes. Please do, because that would be lovely. And it will tell iTunes and other people that you think we're all right, which we hope we are. We try our best to do that. nrf1.uk/ is on iTunes. And of course, our mammoth group of patrons who we love very much and who are doing a sterling job to help us spread the word. There's a little bit of momentum there in us spreading the word. More listeners than ever to this podcast, boys, and all you out there. We really appreciate it. If you want to become a patron with Patreon and help us spread that word more so we can coin more terms like F1 sweats, then all you need to do is visit patreon.com/nrf1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. Let's bring you some tweets and social. This is where we like to hear from you, all the things you want to tell us and say and what have you. And you can do that audially as well now. Go to nrf1.uk, which is the homepage of the website, and you will find a red button which allows you to record any audio you want. And you could even make it about Formula One. And you can say whatever you want and we will include it in the podcast. Now, one person who did that was Sam Todd, friend of the podcast, a regular predictor of races. He's in our prediction league. More of that to come, by the way. And he did a commentary for the start of the Malaysian Grand Prix. Now, I know this is a few weeks ago, but the system does work on the red button on nrf1.uk, I promise. And to prove it, here is Sam Todd doing commentary from his home, I presume, on the start of the Malaysian Grand Prix.
Hello, NRF1. It's Sam Todd here, just doing my start of race commentary for the Malaysian Grand Prix. It's a couple of days late. I do apologise, but I managed to avoid the result, which is good. Last car coming into the position, that's Fernando Alonso. Massa's already having to start from the pit lane, which is bad for him. All the cars are in place. Man's across the back with a green flag. Lights waiting to come on. It's a little bit of a wait. Here we go. What's going to happen? Two Mercedes on the front row. All that looks like is a problem with the lights. Hang on. Three lights. Four. Five. What's going to happen? Oh, they're away. Rosberg's coming. No, Hamilton's in the lead. Rosberg's just behind. The Ferrari's trying out. Vettel's trying to attack Verstappen. Vettel's on the inside of Verstappen. And oh, Hamilton's around. Oh, nice touch. Rosberg's touched Vettel. They're around. And now Perez is into third place. Button's up to like fourth or fifth. Button's had a great start. Oh, and Vettel's wheels off. He can't go. But look, I think it's Hamilton in the lead. Hamilton's the lead. The Red Bull's just behind. One of the Red Bulls has lost about three or four places. Button's up to fifth. Raikkonen's in fourth, I think it is. Blimey, what has happened? This is a crazy first lap already. They're only halfway around. Oh, and Ricciardo's gone around the outside of Fernando Alonso. What a great move that was. Absolutely great move. Wow, there's loads going on at the start.
Well done, Sam. Awesome effort. And if you want to commentate on anything you're watching in Formula One, be it, you know, like a TV commentator, or just give your opinion on anything, please just record it to us. And as I said, if you pop over to nrf1.uk, go on the red button, you can send it to us and we'll probably pop it on the podcast, to be honest, because we love hearing your voices. So well done, Sam. We also had an email from Cody Corrett. Pretty sure that's how you pronounce it. Hello there, Cody. Part of the reason I like IndyCar more than Formula One, and we had three YouTube videos sent of top IndyCar action. Now, who here likes IndyCar? Oh, Steve's shaking his head. Well, as in you've watched it and you don't like it?
Yes, that's correct, yeah. Just didn't really grab me, you know, in the same way as sort of Formula One does, but I don't know, I just couldn't get into it at all. I did try. I've watched several, but I just, I don't know, just didn't really interest me.
Rich?
I've honestly never watched it, so... I don't know if I'm missing out or not, but...
Well, we're gonna tweet and post these video links so that we can all take in what Cody loves about IndyCar and see if it will maybe, you know, grab some of that love.
I watched it in the Nigel Mansell days, or year he was in it.
And obviously Lotus used to compete at IndyCar as well.
Yeah.
With success.
Yeah, true. I tried to catch the Indy 500, because it's a special race. Also, there's quite a lot of Brits in IndyCar because they haven't got enough money to get into Formula 1.
Some would say failed Formula 1 drivers, but that would be harsh, wouldn't it?
That's Formula E.
No one will slag off Formula E on this podcast. Carry on.
But yeah, there's some very good drivers in there. And also, Montoya came from IndyCar. It'd be nice if these drivers who don't get into Formula 1 straight away do well in IndyCar and then maybe come back via that route.
Does IndyCar run through the winter, or does it stop? Does it run at a similar time to Formula One?
I believe it runs at similar times, doesn't it?
Because, you know, we've all got a window now in the winter, haven't we? We can start doing the IndyCar podcast.
That's the Formula E trick, isn't it, to run over winter? So
that we will allow you to say that on Formula E. That's absolutely fine.
There is some history as well with, of course, Graham Hill was one of the few. I don't know if he was the only person who won the Formula One World Championship, the Indy 500, and Le Mans. I think he got. I don't know, was it the same year or what, but I don't know, but he won all three.
Goodness me. We're going to have this chat now in tweets and social. I've saved it away from the news because it's not really news, it's rumour. And that probably sits better in tweets and social. Take us through the rumours, Steve.
So the rumour is, and we have to stress, it is only a rumour, that Paddy Lowe is up for renewal on his contract at Mercedes. And he is rumoured to be in talks with Ferrari. And to take his place, possibly, is the rumour at Mercedes, would be James Allison.
Oof, James Allison's still out of work, presumably since leaving Ferrari.
Yes.
So,
sack from Ferrari.
We'll get in the sack from Ferrari. however that panned out.
You'd be surprised, because are they going to say that the whole success Mercedes have picked up is because of him?
It's also a kind of move that would take a long time to be put together, wouldn't it? Because Mercedes would have some sort of insurance against him wandering over to Maranello.
Yeah, because I think Toto Wolff was interviewed and they asked him the question and he didn't deny it. He's not going. It was, we've got people on the chain that can replace and we've got a plan. And yeah, I mean, as Paddy Lowe, 3 years at Mercedes. And he kind of took over what Ross Brawn done and what Ross Brawn put in place. He just sort of, you get the impression he just sort of helped things tick along. Has he done that much at Mercedes? To say, oh, I've done all I can here, this new opportunity?
No, I have to say I've not been particularly convinced. But, well, we'll see. Ferrari needs something. Anyway, we know that much. Right, it's time in Tweets and Social to bring in the Dats Life boys, because they've done a little recording for us on great Formula One rivalries. What could be more fitting than having a bit of that as Lewis and Nico do battle? So here they are, Tom and Dave.
Hello, NRF1. Dave and Tom from Dats Life podcast here. We're here to discuss some famous rivalries. So, Dave, is there one that stands out in your mind?
Well, for me, going back into the years, I think one of the best rivalries was Mansell and Piquet.
Oh, not one that I would have picked, but go on.
Well, they were at each other's throats for quite a while, and there was a lot of acrimony. That's a word, isn't it? Between the two drivers, and obviously being William, in the same team, and it led to Piquet leaving the team. How about you? What would be the one you pick out?
Senna Prost has got to be there. Yeah. It's got to be.
Nice. Yeah, I'll let you have that one.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, Suzuka, 1990. Yeah.
Classic.
I mean, that's probably not what they would want us to think of, I suppose. And of course, that time when they stopped side by side and they were
Suzuka.
Oh, was that Suzuka as well? Oh.
Yeah, that was Suzuka as well.
Yeah, and they looked across and was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" Like, oh.
Just look at, dude. What
the hell, man?
what the
hell are you doing?
But did Prost turn in early? That's the big question on that one.
We could debate that all night.
Oh yeah, that's a good topic. That's a good topic. Other great rivals, Hill and Schumacher.
Yes, for sure.
The mid-90s. Of course, for me, one of the best rivalries was Hakkinen and Schumacher, because that's when I started to get into Formula One. That's where I got my most fondest memories. And it was a respect between them as well. There wasn't any nastiness between the two drivers. No. They knew each other's capabilities, and they really brought out the best in each other. Now, it's a shame, because I think Hakkinen maybe lost it, left F1 maybe a year too soon. It would have been awesome if he came back, but that's all history now.
Yeah, of course. What about Vettel and Webber? They had the four great years at Red Bull.
Great for one of them.
I was going to say, can you class that as a rivalry if one of the drivers just won all four world titles?
There was definite friction between the two drivers.
And I think you can say that off track as well as on track. And I think that is key to what makes it so great, is that there's more than, it's more than racing. It's the off track as well as the on track that really shapes a great rivalry.
Indeed. Quite.
Hamilton Massa. That was 1 year, but
that's 2008.
The greatest finished 2008. You've got to stop saying that. People don't know what you're on about.
Yeah, Hamilton and Massa, of course, 2008. All the way to the last corner. You can't go talking rivalries without that one.
Yeah.
Massa taking it on the chin as best he could.
So where would you say that Hamilton and Rosberg, where does it stand within all of the great rivalries?
That's a good question. There's loads more we haven't touched upon, obviously. There's
Hunt and Lauda.
Hunt and Lauda. There's Didier Pironi and Gilles Villeneuve. But Hamilton and Rosberg, you'd have to say, simply because of their friendship and the fact that they grew up racing together, it's got to be in the top five.
Yeah, I'd probably say that as well. The fact that it's been the 3 years, the three consistent years.
Yeah, Rosberg has just taken a batting.
Do you think he needs to win this one to make it a truly great rivalry? Or if he was to lose it, would it still have the same?
One race to go. If Rosberg does not clinch the title here, then he never will. Well, whatever the outcome of the final race, we hope you guys enjoy, and we will see you again very soon. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys, and obviously check out the Dats Life podcast. They do Formula One and all sorts of gubbins, so they're definitely well worth a look and a listen. They're friends of the show, and hopefully we'll be back involved with audio and with blogs come the 2017 season. Exciting things planned. All exciting things planned. Right. I think we've finally got to the point where we need to talk about the final Grand Prix of the 2016 season. Abu Dhabi. Yeah, the big news, boys, is right here. Pitbull on Thursday, the Chemical Brothers on Friday, Lionel Richie on Saturday, and Rihanna on Sunday. What a lineup.
Can't wait.
Whoa. I mean, all you need is Craig David, and you got the lot.
Can you fill him in? Right. All right, then. Nico and Lewis, the short story of what is being lined up, it's a 12-point gap. If Nico finishes on the podium, he is world champion. Lewis needs to make up 12 points on him. He needs to win. Nico finish fourth or worst, and then Lewis is champion. But there are other permutations as well. And I think Lewis called it almost impossible odds. I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something along those lines. Certainly unlikely. How are we feeling, Steve? Hang on. I'm just going to say that sounded very down, as if, oh, Nico could really win this. And it's not about that. Whoever wins it will probably deserve it.
And you was the man who said that he would never win a championship.
Yeah. Which was obvious from that moment on, wasn't it? It's a big weekend for my integrity as a journalist.
So you could have had if you had put three bets on at the start of the year, you could have been quite rich. That could have been one of them, and obviously the other two is political.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Yeah, cheers. The thing is, Formula One is a sport. It's often very predictable, but it can be not predictable, like all sports. So what are we going to get on Sunday? Could this be the moment Formula One rediscovers its sporting nature?
The way I'm feeling is it could go one of two ways. It could be just a very standard 1-2, and he just wins it through being in P2. I can't see him beating Lewis unless there's some sort of catastrophe with another car or a mechanical issue or something like that. Or the second way I think it could go is it could be literally be like in 2010 when I think it was Alonso just needed to finish on the podium or third or fourth, something like that, and got stuck behind, I think it was a Renault at the time, and everybody thought that he was going to grab it on that day, and then Vettel went and won it. So it could go either way like that, but I don't know. I just don't. It just seems a bit too much to ask. I think really there's too much consistency going on there. And whilst Red Bull are fairly close, not close enough, I think is the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that as well. The only thing I would say, you know, is either of the drivers got the sort of mentality that Michael Schumacher had, in which case it's, if there's any chance of you winning this, I want to take us both out. You're like a bit like Senna and Prost kind of had, continuing, of course, from the rivalries that the other guys were talking about a while ago. But you look at like Michael Schumacher in 94, he hit Damon Hill, cost him the world championship, but he won it, of course, and he's standing at the side of the race, retired, knowing it was world champion. 97, a few years later, he tried to do the same to Jacques Villeneuve, but he hit him in the wrong place and he crashed. So what goes around comes around. Rosberg, we've seen.
Still cuts quite deep, Fridge. Yeah.
It does. Rosberg, we've seen a couple of times over the last couple of seasons that he doesn't mind making a bit of contact with Hamilton if he has to. And he's been penalised for that. Is he going to try it again as like one last hurrah? Or is he?
It's funny, I hadn't even contemplated the idea of Nico running into Lewis to win the World Championship. But yeah, we should seriously contemplate that, shouldn't we?
I suppose, like I said, in Monaco when he conveniently braked late and caused yellow flags and stuff, I suppose. But would he? I suppose, how desperate is he to win a world championship, and does he want to win it at whatever cost? Because people, you can imagine Hamilton, after if that does happen, Hamilton will, in a way, they'll probably quite enjoy it. And so look what he had to do to try and win this. I've got three, and he's got a dodgy one. but I think Nico has to be careful that he's not too cautious. And like in qualifying, is he the first lap in P3? Is he going to really push because he might worry about crashing and qualifying 10th? Or does he put a standard lap in and maybe think, well, third or second is good enough? And then that can be dangerous. I mean, look back to Lewis Hamilton in Brazil in 2008. He needed fifth and he ended up being fifth and trying to hang on to that. And if it's like in any sport, if you're trying to hang on and play defensive, stuff can happen. And if he, and it is hard to overtake, so if he ends up fourth or fifth maybe after a bad start, it's not going to be easy for him to get back. So
the other drivers are going to be crucial in this. I know they're probably not close enough, but if there is a situation where they are involved. And I said, we might get a processional race and they won't be relevant. But if they are relevant, we need something a bit better than some of the strategy calls and decisions that were made elsewhere in Brazil. Because effectively, at least one Red Bull should have been between the two Mercedes at Interlagos.
Definitely. I mean, Lewis alluded to that after the race. He was like, I can't believe what the decision Red Bull made on that strategy. You know, effectively pointing out that it kind of really gifted some points towards his teammate, and some, you know, would have brought the margin down a bit more. But yeah, I mean, that's true. But you know, I mean, that was a wet race. This is, well, inevitably going to be dry. But yes, very true.
And it's a night race, isn't it? Or is it the dusky one?
Yeah,
so
night, isn't it?
We'll see how that runs. They must make sure they get their visors right. I don't think anyone will be taking any chances with lots of this stuff. Well, I mean, I feel like there's not much more we can say now. We just want it to happen and see what pans out. But clearly, it's just that exciting, that little bit in the back of your mind that's really excited. And it would probably be the case if it was the other way around, that if something goes wrong or something unexpected happened, that's one of the most thrilling things about any sport, and it's what we love to see. I normally ask the question, most important weekend for, but we can touch on some of the drivers, maybe whose futures are either sorted or are going to be sorted, or maybe haven't been sorted yet. Marcus Ericsson, he is confirmed at Sauber. He'll be there for next year. Do we know about Felipe Nasr? Is that a waiting game? So that's one of the seats up for grabs.
Nothing yet. After his strong performance in Brazil, he's got a good claim for it.
He has indeed, or maybe elsewhere, who knows. Nico Hülkenberg will be his last race at Force India before he joins Renault. And in terms of at Renault, we know that it will be... Who is at Renault next year?
Julian Palmer.
So it'll be Nico Hülkenberg and Julian Palmer. Anyone else?
Yeah, Magnussen's gone to Kyle's team.
That's right.
I'm going to call him now.
Yeah, indeed. And Kyle obviously didn't know about that until it happened. And
Ocon's at Force India.
Ocon is at Force India, so he'll be alongside Sergio Perez. So what seats have we got left for next year? The two Mana seats?
The two Mana seats and the one Sauber.
And that's it?
Yeah, so just the three seats left.
Just three seats. Oof. If you're a driver waiting to drive somewhere, you'd be like, ooh. So there we go. So all these guys have got a little bit longer. One person who hasn't, Jenson Button, although he might be back in 2018. Most likely he's just missing out on a massive goodbye and this will be his last Grand Prix. Give us some words on Jenson Button, other than, you know, his missing dope testing.
Yeah, I mean, another British world champion. I mean, there's quite a few of them that did just get the one championship. So he's not bottom of the pile. I think it's just...
Poor old Jenson is getting it today.
I've never been his biggest fan, if I'm honest.
Oh, it's going to be like a Max quote now. Is it like PlayStation?
I think, in fairness to him, I think it was just lots of missed opportunities, you know, where he had a decent car, but it just wasn't quite a car that was enough. There was quite a few in sort of mid-2000s with Honda, I think it was. So just lots of missed opportunities. And then just going to a team like McLaren where... if the history or past is anything to go by, he should have been given a pretty decent car most seasons, and it was probably the worst period in McLaren's history. So just lots of missed opportunities where, you know, given the right car, I'm sure he would have got more championships. But you know, that's the nature of the game.
While Lewis won a lot of races, Jenson took part in a lot of races. He, you know, he has racked up 300. I think it was his 300th Grand Prix popped up, didn't it?
Yeah, no, I think he's one of those drivers who you could kind of see yourself in a pub with. I think he's one of those guys you could quite happily go for a drink with and have a laugh and talk about things. I think he's kind of, as Steve alluded to, he's almost unlucky in the fact that he's had to put up so many years in a car that's not quite been good enough. But as we've, you know, some of the wet races we've seen, sometimes when the car's set up perfect for him, when it's right and he's on fire. But yeah, other times he's, you know, it's got to be right. I suppose he's, I don't know how to explain it, but he's not like such a racer as kind of Hamilton and Alonso, you kind of put them into the bracket of. But when things are perfect with the car, he's going to drive it perfectly, basically.
Well, there's not been many world champions, is there? So he should be celebrated for that. Like I said, on his day when the car was set up, he was sometimes unbeatable. Yeah, I think it's been good for British motorsport. I mean, mid-2000s wasn't a great time for British motorsport. And he done his bit, the great victory in Hungary, his first one when he qualified 14th and come back from there, in his championship year when he dominated the first half and then made us all sweat the second half of the year.
F1 sweats.
The F1 sweats. Yeah, he's been good. When he raced with Hamilton, he was close. I mean, on points, he outscored him over the 3 years. He's been good.
Jensen outscored Lewis.
Yes, I
think. Did he really over 3 years?
Yeah, the points. Yeah,
that's interesting.
There was one season when he actually beat him, and he's actually the only Formula One driver on the grid to have actually beaten Hamilton.
Wow, that's fair.
I think it was 2011. Yeah,
and of course he'll always have Montreal winning from the back of the grid. Doesn't happen very often.
There was a brilliant footage. I'm actually trying to find it now, but there was a footage I saw on YouTube a while back, and it was Button and Alonso and Hockenheim. I think it was 2004. I've got it here. And the driving was incredible, and how closely they were racing for such a long period of time as well.
What we'll do, we'll share it, shall we, on the send me the link and we'll share it on the Facebook and Twitter feeds, which are of course at the NRF1. That is Abu Dhabi on the way. But you know, all this talk about Formula One titles, yeah, you know, Formula One title, blah blah blah, yeah, whatever. It's not about that, is it? It's about this. That's right, it's the Prediction League, the NRF1 Prediction League, into the final round. Now, bearing in mind, we've obviously got one more round of racing to predict, and then our pre-season and halfway season predictions will get added into the table, which will be then revealed in our season review podcast. But as things stand, going into the last race, it's so exciting. I had a brilliant round of it in Brazil. Hülkenberg top 7, Massa no points, Haas 2 outside the top 12, and Magnussen beating Palmer and Hamilton winning the race. Rubens Barrichello just should have turned up, then I'd have had a clean sweep. Lifting me into second, Kyle. But that's not to say that you're not probably closer to Steve than you were before the round, because Steve, you had a bit of a tricky one. So Steve still leads. I'm second, Kyle, you're third, but there is basically 2 points, that won't mean a lot, but 2 points separating the three of us at the top. It's incredible. This is incredible. Brilliant stuff. So that's very exciting. Kieran is fourth after I missed some of his predictions, but he is back up to date now. He is fourth, but he's only 2.2 points ahead of you, Rich, in fifth. So you can definitely overtake him. We've then got Sam Todd, who's kind of lapping on his own in sixth, but you know, that's a great performance. Timet is just ahead of Ped. So Ped, get your predictions in, because you can definitely claim seventh here. Top seven finish, nothing wrong with that. And then Josh and DT is 0.4 between the two of them. DT currently holding the wooden spoon proudly, but he's only 0.4 behind Josh. So you two, get your, I'm sending the message out now, get your predictions in. And anyone else who wants to do it, get your predictions in. If you have a good one, you could sit somewhere nicely in all this lot. Get your predictions in. All you need to do is submit them on the Twitter or Facebook pages before the start of FP1. That is the only rule. Predict what you like, and away you go. So, let's get some predictions in, shall we? The tension is unbearable. But Rich, you're not involved in the titles, right? So you can go first.
Fair enough. I like the way you said I could still get fourth. It's like, not if you've read my predictions, definitely. But I'm going to say, my first one, I'm going to say the race winner will be the new world champion.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Steve likes that one, yeah. He'll probably copy you.
I'm going to say Jenson Button won't finish the race.
Oh, you're so harsh. What have you got in for Jenson?
I've got nothing for Jenson. I love Jenson. He's awesome. But
oh, his biggest fan.
We call it drugs cheat.
Drugs treat and basically.
Those weren't my words. But if you remember...
I'm a journalist, I'm paraphrasing.
If you remember David Coulthard, in his last race he had a special livery on the car and he went out and he crashed at the first corner. Yeah. It's just a typical British thing to do. So I'm just going to say Button won't finish the race.
Okay, that's fine. In a special livery?
Oh, I don't know.
It'll probably be hashtag thank you, won't it, on there somewhere. JB, thank you.
I'm going to say there will be a safety car or virtual safety car period. One of the two, either or, maybe both, I don't know. I'm going to say someone will crash on the pit lane underground exit bit.
I'm sure you said this last year. Wait, so under the bridge, someone will crash there?
Yeah, they put like tyre barriers and all that, and someone's going to crash because they don't know how to drive.
Yeah, well, Maxwell, hopefully, he'll treat like a PlayStation.
And because it's his last race, I'm going to say Massa to finish top seven.
Oh, that would be nice off the back of driving into the wall in Brazil. Which is probably a bit harsh. You done? Is that all your predictions?
That's my five wrapped up.
That's done. Rich is done for his 2016 predictions. How about that? So, shall we go in reverse order, I feel? Reverse so, Kyle, you can go first, then I'll go, and then Steve.
Lewis Hamilton will be on pole. Nico Rosberg will qualify third.
Oh, really? Yeah. Jeez. Kudos point for that one.
And Alonso will be out in Q1. Onto the race. Jenson Button will get points in his last race.
Oh.
Hamilton will win.
Shoehorning his predictions into his beliefs here, I think.
Where will Rosberg finish? Rosberg will finish fifth.
The glee in his face then.
And Valtteri Bottas will finish in the top six. Yeah, I think that's enough, isn't it? Yeah.
There you go. That's all Kyle's predictions for the 2016 season. That leaves me. Did you have them all in your head? Were they sort of there in your head?
Yeah, I was just thinking while Rich was doing his, so yeah.
See, because I'm presenting, I'm not really thinking about what I'm doing. So I'm going to have to think about it now and rattle through it. So I'm going to say Lewis will win the race. Nico will finish second. Nico Rosberg will be the world champion. Jenson Button will have some sort of hashtag thank you message on his car. And he will beat Fernando Alonso in his final race. Somehow, I don't know how. Oh, I can feel the tension. This is not like a normal. This is not like a normal prediction session. I am quite British as well in this, so I'm really going to f*** these up. Just so we're in the final round. I think Jolyon Palmer will outperform Kevin Magnussen and celebrate in style his continuing presence in Formula One next year. So he'll finish ahead of him.
Big John.
No Williams in the top seven. Big John?
Yeah.
Grosjean. It's French for Big John, I think.
Rogro, Big John. Oh, God.
I'm sure that's right, isn't it? Isn't Gross big in French?
Yeah, big. Yeah, Gross John. Yes, Big John.
John is John, so.
Love it.
Hashtag Big John.
Do we know what the national anthem of Abu Dhabi is? Does it have one?
Oh, no idea.
Yeah, let's not get into that. I think that's all. I've lost track, but I think that's my predictions. Steve, he's got one arm across his chest, the other was sort of propping up his chin, contemplating what to do now. The championship leader, the man who stuttered in the last round. What do you got, Steve? And don't give us all these...
I've got a bombshell of mine. I'm not actually going to give any.
I need a few
more days to think about it.
Because
it means quite a bit. And if I'm in it, I'm in it to win it.
Oh,
like you said, you've got until the start of FP1.
Now, you see, normally I would get on my high horse, but the problem is we do a Pinkham prediction league for the football, and I never make a prediction until 5 minutes before kickoff so I can see the teams. So to be honest, I completely understand where Steve's coming from. Yeah. Could you give us one? Just one. Just for the podcast. Just one podcast. One prediction. This will count towards your prediction, but just one. And obviously you'll give others, yeah. So it won't
I'll
be all on it.
It will be a dry race.
You said one.
Right. It's the equivalent of Nico Rosberg driving into Lewis Hamilton. Just there. You just heard it there.
That was rains. It was rain last year in FP1, I think.
Yeah.
So you never know.
You never know.
I want to go down there with a hose. Just
get the sprinklers on, Bernie. F1 sweats. If there's an F1 sweats, we'll have the wet tyres out.
I shall sack myself.
Could be a euphemism, I don't know. There we go. I think that's the only way to end it. Rich, Steve, just about. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us tonight. To all you out there, I hope you enjoyed the podcast too. That is our last preview of the season. Abu Dhabi will be ahead of us on Sunday. Keep an eye out on at the NRF1 on Facebook and Twitter, because I think we're going to, hopefully, a couple of us, we'll all watch the race together live. Which I don't think's ever happened. No, it's happened once or twice in NRF1 history. So hopefully that's going to happen on Sunday, and we'll try and do some social media stuff and bring you all into the old Norfolk party as we celebrate all our collective F1 sweats. But until then, keep those fingers crossed, and we'll be back on the other side of Abu Dhabi to celebrate whoever it is that has become Formula One world champion, and probably who came home 12th, because that's just the way we are. Don't forget to get in touch with us. Email nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and of course nrf1.uk is the website. Send us your audio, send us your words. We love hearing from you. Until the other side, cheerio.